beside you. Let this candle guide you. Soon you'll see a golden stream of light. A cold and friendless tide has found you. Don't let the stormy darkness pull.
Thank you so much, Becca and Chris. Thank you. So it's my pleasure to introduce a guest speaker that we have today. Many of you who have been around the church, the center for a while, are familiar with Michael Lennox. He was as he said, a fixture here for a while because he did a dream interpretation group for quite a while, years ago. Just very short introduction, Michael is a psychologist and also an astrologer, and he also is an interpreter of dreams. So he brings all of this wisdom with him and also knows about our teaching here. And we're just so honored to have him here today to share his unique perspective on life in this wonderful talk that he's giving us today. So please join me in welcoming, even if you're at home, go ahead and clap for Michael Lennox.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you, Bonnie. thank you so much. I'm in complete overwhelm and vulnerability, though. I've got to tell you this. It's like I'm sitting down in the chair and I'm crying, and the song and the incredible reading, and we've got lemons and we've got honey, which means there's lemonade in the making. That's my takeaway so far. So I'm already receiving. Like, I'm already receiving what I came here to receive, why we come into this community. So it is a pleasure to be back. And it's actually even interesting to me to be here as a guest, to be standing in a room that's almost empty, that the last time I was here was full of people. It's a different world. The world has completely transformed since the last time I was here, and we are not done with this transformation. We are in the transformation, which, by the way, is the astrology is part of that. And I did get permission. Actually, I didn't ask for permission. You offered permission to talk about some of the astrology. But I'm not just going to, like, dive it on to you. I'm going to lead you into why it's valuable to even consider looking at the world through a lens like astrology, or any lens that allows us to see the world in such a way that we can be in it, not quite of it, but participate in the experience without being overwhelmed in the midst of all of this chaos and change. I remember, I don't know how long ago this would have been, but it would have been about 20-ish years ago when I was navigating from my first life as a corporate executive in the entertainment industry and into the life that I lead now as a spiritual teacher. You know, you're charged with finding these like tropes and these little marketing statements. And the first one that I ever came up with 20 years ago was, when the outside world is in chaos, we have to turn within for our sense of comfort and ease. I thought I was being so brilliant, you know. Listen to that. I'd tune in to hear what that guy has to say. And so here I am 20 years later, and it's like, oh my goddess. When the outside world is in chaos, we have to turn within for our comfort, kids, because it ain't out there. It ain't out there. I think those of us on this path, on the path of this teaching, the science of mind-based teaching, we have the benefit of having already started from the perspective of that there's a oneness here, that we are one with the universe, we are one with God. And our job as a spiritual practitioner is to know that, to wake up to your oneness with God and find the way in practice each day that you can remind yourself of that. And then we come to a lovely place like this on a Sunday and we get like blasted with a reminder, you know, so that we might go out on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and stay in that sense of oneness. And oh my Lord, has that been tested like crazy this year. So I want to start with the idea of hope amidst the chaos. That is the title of the talk. And it starts with the idea of, like, what's a spiritual principle? Like, you'll hear it said, I'll say it, I live my life based on spiritual principles. Well, what is that? What does that mean? It sounds like woo-woo trope if you don't go a little bit further and explain that. So what's a spiritual principle? It's a big idea. Like love. Discipline. I think that's a spiritual principle that every once in a while someone, a student, will push back on. That's the one who has trouble with discipline. We'll have trouble seeing discipline as a spiritual principle. Faith is certainly a big one. So let's just start with those things right there. Well, what would it be to have love as a spiritual principle in action? So my definition of that is it's the lens through which we see our experience and maybe even choose to act and behave through the lens. What would love do in this experience? What would discipline do in this experience? I mean, for me, discipline is a spiritual principle because of something that was in the reading about the bees who just do what they do because it's what they were born to do, and they make honey. I do what I am born to do, and I make whatever the honey it is that I make in the day-to-day. But oh my God, the path of discipline to get to the place where I was willing to put in the amount of work it takes to do what I do? Boy, that was a slog. But I would choose with the lens of, what would discipline do today? Faith is probably one of the most important ones in a moment like this, because what is faith ultimately but belief in things unknown, unseen, unprovable, and yet it becomes this unshakable way we can move through life, being in the world, not of it, and able to grok or be with the chaos outside. But what's the challenge with faith? Well, first of all, it's really flipping hard to come by in the first place, and it's the first thing we lose when the chaos rises up. Now, I think that's by design. I don't know why this is making me want to cry, but I believe that we experience faith by losing it and reclaiming it. That's faith, not like being in faith. Like if I'm in faith, like I'm good to go and I'm happy and content and relaxed to some extent while the chaos is going on, right? But that's not where the juice of faith is. The juice of faith is waking up without it and saying, oh, wait, I can find this again, And then you do what you do to find the reminders or do the practice or call up a friend or find a practitioner to pray with you, and you get that faith back again by reaching for it and once again remembering that all is ultimately well because we are loved by the universe that invented us. So that leads me to consider then what's hope if hope is different from faith. Now, I know that hope is different from faith because they're different words. It's like they got different letters, they got different spellings, and they ultimately mean different things. by the way, your song to me is about hope. It's this tiny little delicate light amidst darkness that's still there. You turn the light off, and that candle is still there. And boy, the lyrics of that song show us that how extinguishable and potentially, you know, darkening that candle is. But it's there. You turn out the light, the candle is there. That's hope. Hope is the thing that is in your body by virtue of being in a body when all else is gone. Faith is that thing that that goes if you're challenged with the circumstance you're perceiving, because that perceptive mind says, oh, this is bad. Hope is what's in the body, no matter what the mind is thinking. This, I believe, is pre-installed as a survival mechanism. What will human beings, all beings, do? They will survive at all costs. We are resilient beings. Most of us do not have to practice our resilience as much as some. I just got finished reading the memoir of a childhood friend who was burned over 65% of her body and raised by two narcissistic alligator parents. And she is now a thriving psychotherapist bringing incredible, you know, healing and resilience to others. That her hope did not get extinguished, though her faith that life might be good was taken away from her by these extraordinary circumstances. She found the resilience to thrive. So she's on my mind today because I finished the book on Friday. Flashback Girl, if you want to read a story about an extraordinary journey of terrible tragedy that leads to resilience. It's, by the way, as good a memoir as any memoir I've ever read. So a little plug for Lisa DeGeer and Flashback. But it's been putting me in the mind of survival. If we in a body will fight to the death to stay alive and in a body, that has to be because we hope that that's possible. The body's desire and need to meet another day is the same thing as I hope I do. I hope I can. You can even say, I hope I will, without actually feeling the hope. That sentence itself says, oh, it must be in there somewhere. It's got to be in there somewhere. So we slap on the lens of hope, and now I think we can face this year a little bit more gracefully by remembering that the hope is the thing that's just attached to our bodies, and if we're breathing, we have hope. So the spiritual principle thing connects right directly to the idea of archetypal thinking. That spiritual principles are like archetypes. Love, constellated idea of everything that's loving sort of gathers around itself and becomes an archetype. We have lots of archetypes of love through our media and our storytelling and our movies, right? Just archetype of war. And we've got athletes and media that tells dark, angry, violent stories, and the archetype of war rises up as a thing. Why I feel it's valuable to view the world through archetypal principles is that it's an immediate connection between I'm a person in a body and I'm individual and I feel separate from everybody else, but I'm being told I'm connected with everybody else, you know, in spiritual communities, and I study this and that, and I learn this. And even every once in a while, I might feel it in my body in connection with other human beings with different, you know, things that we've explored, all of us. If we've, you know, we've drummed and breathed in a group and prayed and meditated and gone to those workshops to feel these kind of oneness energies. When we're able to live through seeing the world archetypally, that's unity consciousness in action, right? Because I may have a different idea about what war is than you do in a personal ideology of what the world should look like, but the archetype of war is the same for all of us. Same with the archetype of love. Any sort of universally coalesced experience that's archetypal energy, everyone's going to view in the same way. This is what I love about astrology, because astrology is 360 degrees in nature. Nothing's left out. It has no sides. There is no Republican astrology and Democrat astrology. It does not exist. There is no this should not be. We've got planets that represent all the things that are, that we wish weren't, that are scary and violent, Pluto being one of them. Pluto, the archetype of death. He is in the house astrologically this year, by the way. But through the lens of astrology, we have archetypal thinking about everything that we view. We don't judge the thing that's coming. We have archetypes to represent them. I don't think polarization is a spiritual principle. But it might be an archetype. It might be an archetype. In fact, the chart for the United States of America has the planet Mars in the sign of Gemini. So this is the chart that would be cast for July 4th, 1776, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. That's signing of the Declaration of Independence. Mars rules the physical body. So if you think about a country and a planet that rules the physical body, well, what's the correlation here then to the chart's meaning and the experience of the United States? Well, I call Mars us. The population, the human beings, the people, the bodies that make up this great experimental idea of the United States of America. Gemini, forgive me, anybody in the audience who's born with the sun under the side of Gemini, you're wonderful, you're charming, you're talkative, you're sweet. It's not about you. It's about the archetype of Gemini. Those two twins, they invented polarization. They invented the idea that right now on the planet, in this country in particular, there's this thing that's rising up. It's not new, kids. It's not new. It's been here since the beginning. And we have a job to heal that polarization. We must. We must heal that polarization, or we're not going to make it. And I believe we're going to make it. I really, really do. But it does start with this idea that there's a demand to heal the polarization that's existing in the country right now that's rising up like crazy. And if you don't know what I mean, we're on Facebook. Just leave the leave this and go score. Yeah, don't do that. Because it's out there. You can catch up the polarization later. It's on every feed. Most every feed. Not this feed. Not mine. But it's out there. So the idea of Pluto being the planet that represents death and the shadow and things that are hidden and the stuff that's in the underworld, well, Pluto is about to come back to where he was on July 4th, 1776, in about 2 years. So we're in what's called a Pluto return. So you know what a return is, even if you're not an astrologer, because once a year there's a moment when you are in consideration of who you are, what your identity is. You call it your birthday. I call it the solar return, the sun returning back to that place, kicks up the idea of the consciousness of that planet into high gear. Birthday, you think about yourself, who you are, where you're going. Pluto is the consciousness of everything that's hidden, everything that's dark, everything that's nefarious, everything that you would stick in the underworld for safekeeping. So the Pluto return, here we are. The country is rising up for this polarization to be healed. Now, this is where it comes, the sort of the nugget of like, well, the talk. Like, I'm here charged on this day to sort of tell you how to heal this. You ready? I have no idea. I have no idea how to heal this divide. I will tell you, if you had asked me last year, I would have said things about myself and about my own sort of freedom from trauma and how good I do this thing and how lofty I am. You know, and it would not have been a lie. It would not have been inaccurate. It just would have been true to last year's world. Right? But then everything changed and everything rose up. And the first thing that happened to me in March and April was I became astonished at how much rage that there was inside of me when I watched people, oh God, even just saying it out loud is vulnerable making, watching people fight. Thank God I was past the point where I had to do the postings. But you bet your bottom dollar every day was like, nope, Michael, hold back. Tap your, you know, tie your arms to your sides. Don't respond. Because the world was changing and the chaos was sort of rising up, and what that was doing for all of us was squeezing us at a very deep unconscious level. Back to the lemons. You squeeze a lemon, juice comes out. You squeeze a human being, and their shadow comes out. Their Pluto consciousness comes out. The United States of America right now is like a big old lemon being squeezed. And out comes the juice. And what does that juice look like? It looks a lot like polarization and hate. They're pretty scary. What I did with that in April was I just started leading an online meditation every week, and for the first 6 weeks of that, what I talked about was my struggle with how it was going for me and how poorly I felt like I was doing it, but that was the best way I could teach, right? I wasn't going to stand up and say, well, I know how to do this, and I'm going to teach you how. It's like, well, I don't know how to do this, but I'm in it with you, and I'll bring what I can. And I'll invite you all today to think about, well, what would it look like if I looked at the world archetypally? What if I looked at the President of the United States as an archetype instead of a human being? Now it doesn't matter who's president. There's no difference between the president we had 6 years ago and the president we'll have 6 years from now, because the President of the United States is an archetype. Now, again, you have to vote, maybe, and you have to choose which version of the archetype you prefer. One of the things that's juicy about me this morning for me is knowing that I'm speaking to a community that have people in it that are leaning in the conservative direction and people leaning in the liberal direction, and that we come here to know that love invented us. This is in the direction of how we heal the divide, right? So we're getting somewhere, okay? It's not just I don't know how and so we're all screwed. I don't know how, but I know there's a part of me that does know how, and I'm going to tap into that with prayer. Maybe even that's my specific prayer on a given day. God, I do not know how I'm getting through this day, but I know there is a part of me that does know, and I tap into that faithful and hopeful part of myself now. Right there, that's something I know how to do. My head tells me one thing, my heart tells me something else, and they don't match. And I actually know how to bring them back into congruity. Why? I learned that here. I learned that in places like this, where we learned our oneness with God, where we learned that through that oneness with God, it starts with us, and then that reflects out into the world and is mirrored back to you. So this I know how to teach. So I do. I have classes of different ways of diving into the shadow and helping people understand the sort of the demons inside the basement and, you know, what prayerful, you know, orientation can look like. The one thing that you learn in any Science of Mind church is your thoughts create your reality, and it's actually the only thing you can control. What a blessing that is. The thing that's making us crazy is the only thing we can actually adjust. But you can't try to adjust it when you're sitting on Facebook going, you moron, don't you know anything about? We learn here how to use a disciplined mental focus mind to remember the truth of love that's always present, heart or body. I talk a lot about body and the embodiment. Why? Because the body is everything. It tells us everything about what is so in a moment. It only has two word vocabulary. Yes, no. safe, not safe. But that's all you need to know, right? The mind, oh my God, the mind's like, we got to talk about this. There's a problem. We got to talk about this. And if we choose that, it's like, oh God. Safe, not safe, right? So we're all that. We are all in a body that knows whether love is present or not. We have a mind that might be drowning that idea out on a regular basis with too much thought, because this mind is reactive. You look outside you, the heart is going to tell you you're safe, because you probably are. You're in your home, maybe. You just put some food in your belly. You got loved ones. You ain't dead yet. Safe. Heart, safe. Mind, oh, not safe, bad, danger, Will Robinson. So we drop into prayer in that moment. And we say, ah, bring my mind back into my heart today, right here, right now. Help me know the love in my heart so that I might live it now, today, this moment. Where are my feet? My feet are safe. And if you go up, then comes my heart. And then comes my head. It's an adornment on top of the body, designed to respond to it. By the way, the mind is designed to tell us whether we're safe as well. We just misuse it. The heart says, yes, safe. But the mind says, wait. Now I can cross the street. Right? But if you ask the mind to do more than that, you're in trouble. So this I know how to do. This I know how to teach. This I've done probably 70 times today. Already. Actually, coming in here, it becomes irrelevant, right? I come into a place like this, and I am so reminded at a visceral level, at the level of the body, I am reminded that I am safe. I am reminded that we are all one. I am reminded that it is all love. I am reminded that hope has never left and faith is there for me to grab at any moment. So God bless this community where there's like 20 people, where 3 years ago there might have been 200. And you're at home enjoying the fact that you can still tap in and get this reminder and take what you received today and bring it into the world tomorrow and again on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday. Then come back next Sunday if you need a reboot. But I really do encourage you all to remember the spiritual principles that you grab and stick on your camera, the lens that you look through and act through. Remember archetypal mind. We're all in this together. And we're all experiencing the same energies, though we wish to separate them into two, good and bad, and I'm on the good side. It's an illusion. We know that here. But it is a mighty, mighty challenge, machine that just runs in two different directions, and it's a daily act. We've got to do this daily. And it starts with how you begin the day and how you bring that mind and heart into congruity. And guess what, kids? If you're here, you know exactly how to do this. So do it for yourself, and trust me that the universe arcs towards good. We got this. The healing is in the bag. It may take a couple of years and generations to play out, but we do our part now as individuals, and then allow the love, the hope, and the faith to be reflected back to you and multiplied abundantly. Thank you very much.